Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
JT Barrett out of the shotgun. Option left side. Barrett keeping. Gets to the 10. Barrett to the 5. Barrett to the pylon. And Barrett, touchdown. Ran it down the left side. Got an excellent block from Curtis Samuel. And JT Barrett has given Ohio State a 26-3 lead on his second running touchdown of the year. Barrett in a shotgun. Gets the snap. Hands it to Weber. Straight ahead for his first collegiate touchdown. Mike Weber. 1 yard run. 33-3. Ohio State.
Back to throw, Spate, looking right, throws right. He's got his tight end, Jake Butt. It's a touchdown, Michigan, from 3 yards out. He's going to try from 50. Here's the kick, it's blocked. Michigan blocks it, comes right back into the hands of the kicker right, and he is tackled immediately by Jeremy Clark, and the Wolverine defense stands tall. Give to the fullback, Khalid Hill. Light he pounds pass. Over the right guard, and he goes into the end zone. Touchdown, Michigan, Khalid Hill, his second in as many weeks.
Matthew leans in. He's got it. Wants to throw. Pressure comes. Set up a screen. Get it to Riddick. Riddick to 15. Riddick 10. Riddick 5. Riddick end zone. Touchdown, Detroit Lions. Larry Warford with a big block to help Springham. And the Lions are back on top. Here we go. For the lead. 43 yards. Hash mark left side. Spot down. Kick on the way. It is up. And it is good. He got it. Matt Prater with 4 seconds to go, and the Lions are back on top. Bray is going to take this 1 yard deep. He's coming out. Here he goes. Should be the final play of the game. Bray throws it behind him. It is taken by a Colt. He flips it back. They're throwing it around. It is now T.Y. Hilton running down the right sideline. He is hit. He's looking for somewhere to go. They're still pinned back inside the 10. It is taken by T.Y. Hilton. He throws it away. It's out of bounds. Put this baby away. This game is over. The Lions come up with a victory. That should be a safety, and the Lions should win it 39-35.
You know, our guys stuck together, played hard. You know, not a perfect game by any means. We practice those situations. Coach Caldwell puts us in those situations in practice. I feel like he makes them tougher than that half the time. We either have no timeouts or one timeout. It was great to have the full complement of 3 timeouts. That's team football when you do that. Nobody's burning a timeout in the third quarter to, you know, hurt us. It really helped us. You know, guys made plays. That's what it's about. We've got a lot of playmakers on this team, and guys stepped up.
Momentum, you know, all of a sudden, you know, we had a ball, snapped over the quarterback's head, and safety to me, I thought that's when it kind of tilted and started going the other way. I thought momentum was kind of coming our way. It'd been nice to finish that drive with a touchdown. We had our opportunities and didn't get it done, so I take total responsibility for that, all that on offense. This team, you know, we got to get better, and we will.
We wanted to get the win. That's all that matters, and we came up short today, and it started with me. Just had to play better. You know, put us in better situations, can't turn the ball over. Yeah, guy kind of surprised me there on the sideline trying to get out of bounds. And, you know, it's just an unfortunate play. Just trying to, you know, fight for as many yards as we could, try to, you know, go score a touchdown, at least put us in a position to have a chance to win the game. Hurt pretty bad, but felt like I could get back out there and finish the battle with my teammates out there on the field. The play happened, and you just got to move on from it. You know, sprained shoulder and just, you know, monitor it and see how it goes.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Welcome indeed to the extravaganza on what we like to call Monday Afternoon Quarterback right here on The Ticket. Yes, indeed, Monday Afternoon Quarterback, as we have a ton of football to discuss. You just heard a little bit of the Ohio State and Michigan highlights from their respective wins. You heard a little bit from the Lions win. You heard a little bit from the Browns loss. And what you also heard there was some misinformation, not that it was intentional. Robert Griffin III talking about a sprained shoulder. Guess what? Not a sprained shoulder. It is a fractured bone in his shoulder, and he is now going to be on the IR for at least the next 8 games. As the Cleveland Browns quarterback carousel continues, it is just unbelievable, inconceivable that a team could could go through this much trouble trying to get a quarterback to play this game for any length of time with any degree of consistency whatsoever due to injury or staying healthy or obviously actually performing well. They can't do it. They just cannot do it. So now you also see why the Browns were hesitant to give up Josh McCown in an offseason trade to one of the teams looking for a new starting quarterback due to their own certain situations. Speaking of starting quarterbacks, Carson Wentz was terrific for Philadelphia. He was the guy the Browns did not want. They said, we'll take that boatload of draft picks instead of using our number two overall pick to take Carson Wentz. And away we go. Carson Wentz, 22 of 37 for 278. Two touchdowns, no picks, a 101 quarterback rating. Robert Griffin III out for the next 8 weeks, 12 of 26, 190, no touchdowns, a pick, and guess what? A whole bunch of problems. Bad protection, bad receiving, all kinds of problems plaguing the Cleveland Browns starting quarterback. But now let's talk about quarterbacks who had a little bit of a better day today. How about your boy Matthew Stafford in the Lions' season opening win over the Indianapolis Colts, 39-35, but that was not the story of the game. The story of the game wasn't even, in my opinion, Matt Prater's redemption with the 43-yard field goal that gave the Lions that victory after blowing an extra point that almost cost them the game in the fourth quarter. The story is Matthew Stafford, who played like he is trying to elevate his name and his game perhaps into the upper echelon of the elite quarterbacks in the league rather than in that second tier or third tier, depending on where you are as far as, you know, where you like to rank Matthew Stafford. All I know is in week one, I don't know if anybody played any better, maybe with the exception of Drew Brees, but he did it in a loss. Drew Brees, of course, threw for 400 yards and four touchdowns, but how about Stafford, 31 out of 39, 340 yards, and nary an interception to go with three touchdowns. That is a man-sized season debut for Mr. Stafford against the Indianapolis Colts. You pull something like that off, especially on the road, a quarterback rating of 128.6, a QBR of 89.6. That's just an outstanding day for Matthew Stafford, and it's got to have Lions fans giddy with the possibilities, especially doing this again in his first game without the security that comes with the man known as Megatron. How about that? Spreading the ball around to boatloads of receivers. Seven catches for Golden Tate. Five each for Theo Riddick and Ameer Abdullah out of the backfield. Four for Marvin Jones. Five for Eric Ebron. Three for Anquan Boldin, Andre Robertson, Cole Wick, one each. That's just a tremendous all-around game for the Lions quarterback, and we need to give them the props that they deserve. Coming up right here on the Extravaganza at about 3:35, we're going to go to college football, and we're going to talk a little bit about not Ohio State or Michigan and their wins. You just heard some of the highlights from, but Mike Jinks, the head coach at Bowling Green. And then also in the 4 o'clock hour, we're going to talk a little bit of Browns football and RG3 going on the IR. But we start today, that'll be at 4:05, but we start today to the victor go the spoils and top billing on our radio show, and that is the Detroit Lions. The 39-35 win here to break it down with us, fresh off of writing some outstanding work for prideofdetroit.com, is our very own Chris Lemieux. Chris, what's going on, brother? How you feeling?
So, doing all right. Finally getting over a bit of a cold that's been kicking me up and down with this weather. But I got to say, Sunday definitely helped pick me back up.
I was going to say, that's a pick-me-up under any circumstances. I don't care if we're under weather or not. You know, yeah, I don't know about you. How did you feel? Did you pick this game going in, Chris?
Yeah, although granted I gave it's fascinating because we've been staff of Pride Detroit. Just a couple days ago, we were giving our, like, on-the-year win predictions, and I was very low on the Lions. I think I only picked, like, 6-10. Wow. I still kind of feel that way, but I'll explain later why. But I think I also picked the Lions to win. Granted, my Jeremy, our editor, asked me for a score, and I always give him these bogus, like, really weird scores. So I think I picked, like, Lions 11, Colts 8.
So, well, you got the W anyway.
And
you,
that's the point. Yeah.
And you almost got the spread right too. I picked the Colts in this game. Jim, when we picked the games on Friday, did you pick the Lions or the Colts?
I think I picked the Lions, if I'm not mistaken.
I picked the Colts because we did our routine where we always talk about if two teams, especially in the NFL.
Yeah, you know what? I did pick the Colts. I did pick the Lions. I went 24-20 because I was the same as Justin Rogers picked, and I liked that call
there you
at
go.
The time.
Yeah, I felt like, because I'm not, I told you this in my prediction for the season too, Jim, I'm not that high on the Colts as being a potential division champion like a lot of people are. Even though Andrew Luck coming back healthy gives them a chance to do some things, I'm not as high on the Colts as a lot of people. And I said, to me, these are two relatively evenly matched teams. And if it comes down to two relatively evenly matched teams, without any real, you know, strong reason to pick the visiting team, then I'm going to go with the home team to win the game. So I picked the Colts. Go ahead, Chris.
Yeah, I was about to say, the one thing that kind of pushed me towards the Lions was just looking at how depleted they were as far as injuries. Like, injuries have kind of decimated this team in a lot of ways. And I think, you know, we're going to talk about Matt Stafford. I think he had a great game. You bring up QBR. There was another stat from Football Perspective, ANY over A, adjusted net yards per passing attempt, which is like taking into it's a bit of a math equation, but it takes into account passing yards, passing touchdowns, interception, you know, minus interceptions thrown, sack yards, all that kind of stuff. And to your point, he was second overall on Sunday in NAYA, next behind, of course, as you mentioned, Drew Brees. Granted, of course, at the same time, Andrew Luck was number third there too.
But
going into this game, like, I think we all knew, like, the Colts defense is just really injury ridden. So, like, I think if there is a point of skepticism about Stafford's performance on Sunday, it's that. It's that basically, like, you're throwing into a secondary that's just been ripped apart by injury before the season even began.
Yeah, and I think that is fair to point that out. We certainly don't want to proclaim that Matthew Stafford had that great game against, you know, a Hall of Fame defense. Certainly not, but it's a great start for this football team. It's a great start.
Oh, absolutely.
And not just, you know, and we of course we've got to get to the end, but before we do and talk about Prater and you know, the great second chance that he got and how he was able to convert, we got to talk about how they got there. And again, and I ran down some of the stats, Chris, you know, as far as the running game. They had 116 yards on the ground. Last year they averaged, what, about 85 yards a game on the ground? So they went way over that. In fact, I think they passed last year's average per game in the first half. They had like 87 or 88 yards in the first half and 116 on the game. Those are huge, huge things, because we saw in the preseason, of course, without Ameer Abdullah, that the running game was essentially non-existent. But they got 63 out of Abdullah, and they also got 6.4 yards a carry out of Theo Riddick on 7 carries, which is something I've been talking about all preseason long, about whether or not they can use him there.
And a career long 21, like, he had never run for more than, I think, like 10 yards before this. Like, he had just never, as a tailback, like, he had kind of, he had been like converting between tailback and slot receiver at Notre Dame. He kind of filled that role that I know Brian Kelly at Notre Dame kind of uses some of these guys at running back to be kind of a hybrid receiving threat. And that's been mostly what he's done with Detroit. And that's why he was very highly touted. He just got his massive contract extension before Sunday too. It was just on Saturday, and it was because, like, he is such a receiving threat on this offense. He had, let's see here, he had 5 receptions for 63 yards, but again, as you point out, he had 7 carries for 45 yards. He averaged 6.4 yards and a rushing touchdown, which is like, we were looking at that. It's like, where did this come out of Theo Riddick? They were trying to have him, like, run during the preseason, but we were just kind of sitting there and like, yeah, I don't see this happening. And all of a sudden, he belts out a 21-yard long.
Yeah.
Like, that's something new out of him.
Well, and you know, you look at it overall, it's 12 touches then for, what, 109 yards and then a couple of touchdowns. So if you,
yeah, he was my MVP for the, like, along with Stafford, he was like my game ball for the day.
And what I liked about Stafford, as I kind of mentioned on your intro, we're talking to Chris Lemieux, who is writes for PrideOfDetroit.com, also helps us out right here at ESPN 106.5. The Ticket, Jim Cushlin, is here as well. Jimmy, feel free to jump in as we go. But what I really liked is, again, this is the first time Matthew hasn't had, Megatron on his side. Calvin Johnson has always been there, barring injury, of course. Instead of being on the football field, he's on the dance floor, doing Dancing with the Stars. And so instead of trying to find one guy, of course, to be your go-to guy, the way you do when you have that kind of an elite talent, he spread the ball around to a lot of guys. Golden Tate caught 7 of them, not of many real consequence, any long ones. He had only had 41 yards, but as I ran down, you know, he ended up getting the ball to, what, 2, 4, 6, 8 different receivers, and that's what, you know, is going to make defenses, struggle, I guess, to stop the passing game, because Matthew might go to any different direction, it seems like, at any time right now.
Yeah, and that's kind of been the goal of, you know, new offensive coordinator Jim Bob Cooter. I think we've been saying this ever since, you know, the 2015 season ended, that this was kind of his vision, and he tried to move that way, you know, when he took over for Joe Lombardi after Lombardi got sacked in the middle of the 2015 season. This was his vision. You know, you don't have Calvin Johnson anymore. Okay, fine. You know, you lose that very deep, consistent, deep threat out of him. Fine. But at the same time, like, okay, let's go out and sign Marvin Jones, you know, go out and sign Eric Ebron to play the slot, you know, I mean, not, I'm sorry, not Eric Ebron, Anquan Boldin to play the slot.
Right.
Give an expanded role to Eric Ebron, continue to build on what you have with Theo Riddick, who led the league in receptions for tailbacks last year. Give a better Amir Abdullah, who can receive as well. So, like, yeah, you have, I'm just looking at the score sheet here, you have, like, six high targets on there before getting into, like, the depth guys like Colwick and Andre Roberts. But, like, yeah, you have three legitimate receivers who can all get the ball at any point. You have two receiving-capable running backs in Theo Riddick and Amir Abdullah. And you have an expanded role for Eric Ebron, which is kind of what they drafted him for to begin with, to be this receiving threat. And people always thought Eric Ebron could become this. He ends the day averaging about 9.2 yards per reception on five receptions. And, you know, that's not... It's not topping it, obviously. Marvin Jones really balled out for, you know, his four receptions. But Eric Ebron was as productive as anyone else out here.
That's all the good news, Chris Lemieux. Let's talk about some of the bad news on the other side of the ball.
Sure.
Just looking at your website's grading, Jeremy's grading. He's your editor, Ryan. And I don't think it's you can really dispute much of this. Defensive line a D, linebackers a C minus, secondary a big fat F. Even Darius Slade, the new what is he, a $50 million man, $60 million man? I can't remember how much
something
they gave him
like
in the
that.
Offseason.
Yeah, he had a couple of good years, and just today was just a really bad thing, a day all around for the defense. And like for a while, we were looking at it because the score. Okay, so the score at one point in the second quarter was 21-3. That was and as the Colts made that touchdown and then started to score as the second half began, people began to draw parallels to the first game of 2015 where the score was 21-3 and the San Diego Chargers scored 30 points unanswered to ultimately win that game. Like, that's kind of what we were all fearing. Yeah, the defense. I mean, yeah, you're up against Andrew Luck, and you're up against, you know, Dante Moncrief and his other receiver, whose name escapes me right now. But, like, you're up against a pretty good Colts defense, I mean, offense. And, you know, that offensive line was banged up, but for some reason just – I don't know if they just got complacent in the second half or if they took their foot off the gas or whatever you want to say. But, like, maybe
the Colts
offensive line made
adjustments. Hold on, that goes into coaching,
yeah.
Chris. That goes into coaching, in which, again, PrideOfDetroit.com gives a Caldwell a C-minus here. So there was something that happened at halftime and something that Jim Caldwell did not adjust to, whether it's X's and O's, an actual strategy, or if it was just, you know, motivationally. Something flipped there, obviously, and the Colts, you know, came back.
Well, we can get to this at some point as we talk about the end, but actually I think Jeremy gave him that grade because of his clock management near the end.
Yeah, he did. He did explain that, obviously, and there were some mistakes made there, but also, Indianapolis obviously had a lot to do with the way things, you know, played out in the end. I understand his point about clock management, but and the Colts certainly gave them a break, gave the Lions a break there in order to be able to get down there and come back and get that game winner from Prater. But go ahead. I'll let you finish your thought there.
No, that was about it there. I was about to say, like, yeah, all NFL coaches kind of have bad clock management if we're getting to it. But, like, yeah, no, like, I mean, you could point to Caldwell, or maybe you could point to the defensive coordinator, Terrell Austin, or maybe you could give some credit to Andrew Luck and the Colts for adjusting on their offensive line and on Andrew Luck just getting that ball out faster. But no matter what it is, just on that score sheet, you do see the Colts climbing back into that game, finally forcing the Lions to get serious again and get back in gear and kind of bring it down to the wire. It wasn't a good game. Like, that secondary got really lit up. You know, the backfield and the front seven weren't really getting any penetration at all. So I think there's going to be some game tape to watch for the Lions because, like, again, this is a Colts team that I think most people on paper said, yeah, you probably should have beat. If not, like, you know, most people were saying toss up, if not beat them. But you're going to have some tougher targets down the line. So I think the defense has got to not to mention some good quarterbacks coming down the line too. You, defense has a little bit of tape to look at and figure out how to, figure out what kind of changed from the beginning of the game to where they were just getting, you know, bullied around by Andrew Luck.
And how concerned, Chris, Jim Cushman there, should Lions fans be regarding some of the points of the defense? We've seen the grades that you guys at Pride of Detroit gave out. I can't really argue with them. The secondary got burned. They did not have as much up front. You mentioned some of the quarterbacks they're going to be facing in coming weeks. We love this offense. It's got the weapons. We saw them all on display. But if you're going to have holes in that defense where you give up 21-3 leads, well, you might be okay in the end against Indianapolis, but somehow I don't think that's going to work in Lambeau, for example.
Right, right. And, yeah, it kind of reminds me of what I read. One of my favorite things Deadspin writes every year, writer Drew McGarry, who also writes for GQ, does these Why Your Team Sucks guides. And the one he did for the Lions, he basically said on what might not suck, it's like, look, this team is incredibly talented offense, that they will score, like, you know, 21 points in a quarter before just floundering it away on defense. And that's exactly right. You know, we talked a lot during the preseason and the offseason about, like, we really like the talent on this defensive line. But that's really about the only part of the defense where we're confident. We were kind of about 50-50 on the secondary, and we were just looking at the linebackers, like, okay, outside of Andre Levy and Tahir Whitehead, and Tahir Whitehead kind of had an up-and-down game, but outside of those two, like, linebacker depth isn't good. And I think we did see in this game a bit of worst-case scenario when it came to the secondary. You know, Darius Slay did not have a good game. Questions still remain about the safeties. Nevin Lawson and Quandre Diggs just you couldn't figure out the second corner position opposite Darius Slay. So, yeah, the backfield just did not look like they really figured out what they were doing. And that's going to be a problem. That's going to be a problem. It's going to be very frustrating.
All right, Chris, let me wrap up our analysis of game number one, the win over the Colts 39-35. Give us a thumbs up and a thumbs down. Your player of the game and your worst performer, even in victory for the Detroit Lions today.
I would have to say, man, worst. I like Stafford a lot in this game.
I won't make it be on the Lions. Thumbs up, thumbs down. You can go ahead and give it to a Colts and stay lost. Just thumbs up, thumbs down. It's going to be something.
No, I mean, I'll give it to Stafford. I'm rough on Stafford, but I mean, obviously he's still commanded this offense. There's a great gift. It's been one of our biggest page view hitters has been him, like, screaming at, we don't know what he's saying actually, but he was, like, screaming at one
sure
of the players.
You sure wrote it on there. If you didn't know, you sure guessed pretty well.
Well, I think that was during the game-winning drive. He was just yelling at guys to, like, get out of bounds and everything. But, I mean, yeah, like, he really put together a lot on that drive. Like, there's no disputing that. On the defense, I really liked Kerry Hyder early on, defensive tackle, who kind of made a name for himself. He was practice squad bait for some other team before signing with the Lions this year. That was good. And then, yeah, thumbs down. I'm just going to have to give it to, like, I don't know, Darius Slay. You get paid all that money. You're supposed to be the big threat out of the secondary. I don't know if he just wasn't getting targeted or what, but yeah, it just didn't look good for him.
Yeah, I would agree, and that's a good one to point to. Really, nobody in that secondary had a good game, as you pointed out. But they got the win. Go ahead.
Yeah, and I don't want to harp too much on Paul Wells, clock management, because ultimately he proved out to be right. Like, he needed those timeouts for a drive near the end. But I mean, it's hard for me to kind of break down what happened near the end too. And obviously that scenario doesn't happen if Matt Prater makes that extra point too. So
that's exactly,
like,
right.
You get into these scenarios, it's so random.
Chris, I said we were going to come back to that, and we never did, really. You know, redemption, it's big. It's big. You miss an extra point like
Absolutely.
That, even though they're no longer the chippies they used to be from the 2-yard line or whatever, 2.5-yard line. They actually have to make about a 35-yarder now. You know, they're not chippies. They're still expected to go in. And if they would have lost 35-34 because of that, it would have been something he'd have a hard time coming back from, even with his experience, to give him that chance. And credit to Matthew Stafford and the offense for getting back down the field to give him a chance to redeem himself now, not next week. We'll get him next time. But to do that right now and come off with a W is very, very large for Matt Prater.
Yeah, Matt Prater's a veteran like that. Like, when I saw him coming back from the field goal, I wasn't really – I mean, I was worried, like anyone is for a game-winning field goal, but I wasn't too worried because I knew, like, this guy's a veteran. He's been around the league for so many years.
Oh, yeah.
And kickers like that, like, unless you are just a guy who just has the absolute yips or something, like, he figured it out. He knew how to
come back. It's like a closer. It's like a closer
when
you blow a save.
Exactly.
You have to have a short memory, but what I'm saying is it's nice to be able to forget about it like after 20 minutes as opposed to a week. You know what I mean? That short memory is it's a lot more helpful to say that's gone now because I just atoned for it 20 minutes later.
Yeah, and he's got a good team around him too. You know, veteran long snapper Don Mulback and Sam Martin, the punter, who's also the placeholder on those kicks. Like that's a seasoned team right there. So like, yeah, they all kind of got everything back together and just hit it when it counted.
Last thing about the passion and the, you know, at least that's what I'm going to call it. You pointed out the videos that are on the website right now at prideofdetroit.com. I still, are they, I know it's GIF. Do you say GIF or JIF?
I think it is JIF. This is a very old and very heated debate on the internet. I think it's GIF, but again, there is probably a school of the GIF out there that is going to deem me as an apostate at some point, but I'm pretty sure it's GIF.
Well, anyway, you have those looped videos is what they are on the website of Matthew Stafford yelling, and like you said, he's yelling, get the F out, and it might have been out of bounds, like you said, in that game-winning drive. In another one, use your brain, and he's screaming. What I like about it is because last year, and you may or may not recall this, but last year, it was ESPN, and they do them every year, but, you know, they do the quarterback rankings in tiers. And one of the comments, and I think it was ESPN's, one of the comments on Matthew Stafford where he was ranked was, he seems like a guy that he could win a game or lose a game, and he's going to have the same attitude no matter what. It's like, oh, well, I really would like to win, but, you know, it's not going to ruin my day if I don't. Like, almost as if to say, there's not a lot of fire there. There's not a lot of passion. There's not a lot of excitement. There's not a yearning to win. You know, a Tom Brady kind of burning, you know, desire to do whatever it takes to get a W. That was the perception that was offered by the people doing those rankings. And whether it's reality or not, I don't know. But what I do know is that what I see in those little videos that we were just talking about and that fire down the stretch yesterday completely belies that characterization of Matthew Stafford.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not one to believe in that kind of intangible stuff. And I think a lot of it, too, is like, I think that older characterization about how he might not care is just kind of his facial expression sometime. I know we do this a lot with Andrew Luck, too. He's got both guys kind of have a bit of a dopey face, even at the best of times. And maybe it was the beard, too, that he was rocking that year as well. But I think, too, it's like, yeah, no, I think anyone would be fired up where it's like, you know, we're running desperately out of time. We have no timeouts left. And like, oh no, this one of the guys I just threw the ball to might not be able to get to the sideline to stop the clock. So it's just like, yeah, it's like with anything where, you know, you're trying to do your job and everything just going wrong. Sometimes the human emotion just boils up to that fever pitch. That's what was going on with Matt Stafford. I think it's a completely human reaction. So I don't know if it's any competitive fire or intangible or whatever have you. It's just
that's all it is. Yeah. I agree with you. I think it's just an appearance, the expressions on his face or whatever. But I just know that whatever that perception was, I think it should be gone because yesterday he really, really showed that fire and how bad he wanted to get down there and get in position to kick that field goal for that game-winning drive.
Yeah, I mean, last point for me. I'm just like, how long were we doing this with Matt Stafford where – who was it? Was it Colin Cowherd? It was Colin Cowherd who was constantly saying Matt Stafford doesn't look like a leader because he wears his hat on backward. Just those kind of things like that. Like
I think that about Ben Roethlisberger too, and two
and Tony Romo too. Yeah, yeah. You know? Like it's like, and then we find pictures Tom Brady wears his hat backwards. Just the silliest things we find to point out about these quarterbacks because we need something to talk about for 6 days between games.
That's exactly what it seems to be sometimes. But what we talked about today, I think, was very valuable and good analysis. That's why we have you on, Chris. Great stuff. Thank you, my friend. I appreciate your time, Chris Lemieux, joining us from PrideofDetroit.com. We've got to get out of the NFL for a few minutes here because we need to get back into college football. The head coach of the Bowling Green Falcons is standing by. Coach Mike Jinks joins us, Bob France, and Jim Cushman as we continue right after this on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
106.5 The Ticket right now traffic. Sponsored by SuperFitnessToledo.com. Serving Toledo since 1972 for less than $5 per week average cost.
Taking a look at you right now, traffic, no major accidents reported by Toledo Police at this time, so we're doing pretty good. We'll have another report very soon on your right now traffic.
Hey, Bob France here for the Buckeye Store and More. I told you we're talking college and pro football, and that's the college and pro superstore way. The Buckeye Store and More is giving you 10% store-wide savings right now with hundreds of new Nike products in stock for Ohio State, for Michigan, for all of the fan zones that you have in the Buckeye Store and More, including the Fighting Irish, the Spartans, the Falcons, the Rockets, and Detroit's Tigers. 10% store-wide savings, and if you get in early, you can take advantage of doorbuster items. Select items 50 to 75% off every day at the Buckeye Store and More, your college and pro superstore, 5700 Monroe in Sylvania, right there in Starlight Plaza. If you know where it is, you'll know where Ralphie's is. It's between Ralphie's and Dave's in front of Prometica. If you're looking for a better landmark, look for Big Brutus. He is on the roof of the Buckeye Store and More. Hundreds of new products arriving every day at the largest store in Ohio dedicated to Buckeye gear. The Buckeye Store and More, Starlight Plaza, 5700 Monroe in Sylvania, your college and pro superstore.
Now back to the Bob France Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Rolling on our weed is 3:43. Without further ado, let's talk a little college football, BG style of game you hear right here. Let's get to Coach Mike Jenks, head coach of the Bowling Green State Falcons. Now 1-1 on the young season after surviving a scare by North Dakota 27-26 on Saturday. Coach, good afternoon. How are you?
Doing well, guys. How are you doing?
We are fantastic. Jim Cushlin is alongside as well. Coach, yesterday we saw a team in the NFL go for a two-point conversion instead of a game-tying one-pointer to go into overtime, and that was Jack Del Rio and the Oakland Raiders. They made it. North Dakota tried to do that to you on Saturday. What was going through your mind when you saw them not send the kicking team out?
Well, I had an idea what was going to happen. Anytime you fight back and you got a chance to win it, especially on the road, you're going to go for two. That's kind of like the that's the coaching rule 101. My biggest deal was we wanted to get a couple of timeouts and take a look at the formations and put our kids in the best situation to get a stop. And thankfully did, because winning is a lot better than losing.
Coach, I read one report of the game describing the mood after the game as one of relief, not a whole lot of celebration. This is an FCS school and so on, and you know, you hold on like that, you're able to get that stop that you need to, you preserve the win, and that is the most important thing, is getting the win, obviously. But did you feel more relieved, or did you feel great about that victory?
No, definitely more relieved. I mean, when you come out and you have a start like we had an opportunity to go up 21-28 points in the first quarter. You know, and you know, hats off to North Dakota, the coaches and their players, because they stuck to their game plan. They wanted to control the ball and they kept fighting and kept playing. And if you're able to convert on a couple of those opportunities that we had later in that first quarter, you know, you stretch that lead to 28 points, the game changes. You know what I mean? And you've got to learn, as a young team, we've got to learn when we have opportunity to put a team away, you need to get it done, because the longer that you let them hang around, that old confidence grows and momentum tends to switch and they think they can play with you. And that was the case Saturday.
No question about it. Coach Mike Jenks is our guest. He is the head coach of Bowling Green. Jim Cushlin is here as well on the extravaganza. Cush, go ahead, Bob.
And, you know, there is one thing as I'm looking around, some of these guys, Coach, that you can't celebrate, that tell me about the performance of the sophomore Scott Miller. A great game for him. Got in the end zone three times, 161 yards receiving from some of those James Napke passes. Talk to me about his day as he blew up the stat sheet.
Yeah, he did. You know, Scotty practiced well last week, and you saw the result of that Saturday afternoon. You know, Scotty's a kid that people really don't realize how quick this young man is. He can really turn him over, and it sometimes can be a nightmare matchup for some of those bigger linebackers up inside. Earlier on, they were rolling a lot of coverages towards five, Ronnie Moore kid, which put him in some one-on-one situations, and he made him pay.
Coach, let's talk about the quarterback situation there. Tell me about the thinking with the insertion of James Douglas into the game.
Well, you know, we can't turn the ball over. And more so than that, I think in our system, it's all driven by the quarterback. And you know, we've got to be sure that we're putting the football team in the right situations to be successful. There were a couple opportunities that we didn't do that and felt like we needed to meet it. Take a deep breath, sit him down, talk to him about it a little bit, and told him we were going to put him back in the game, but probably a series sooner than I anticipated, because the young kid went in and threw a pick six and which is crazy how that happens sometimes. But I couldn't be prouder of the way that Konapke responded, because he went right back in the next series, and I think it was a 2-minute situation, took us down and scored. So
yeah, and that's a great point. Of course, I meant to say James Morgan, who you inserted into the game, and you're right. You know, you put him in just for a minute, so you can sit down and talk to your quarterback, and then the worst possible thing happens. But what does that say about, you know, the poise of Konapke, the fact that he wasn't rattled by it, and the fact that he was sulking at all about being pulled out for a minute or two here, and he went back out there and led exactly what you needed him to do?
No, he wasn't soaking, but he was hot. I don't get, and if he wasn't, he's not the guy to be playing quarterback for us, because he is a competitor. You know what I mean? His demeanor, he's kind of one of those guys that doesn't say a lot, not a kid of many words, you know what I mean? But he wanted to be back in there. He handled it well. He wasn't belligerent by any means, but I could see in his face that it upset him, you know what I mean? And he went back in, threw the pick, and kind of slapped me on the butt after he threw it and let me know that, hey, man, don't mess with me. So I kind of like that.
I like that, too. Like you said, it's good that he was hot, not that he was sad or not that he was disappointed, but angry, because he knows he's better than that. He wants to go out there and prove that, and that is the right thing. That's what you need. That's the kind of leader you need. What was practice like last week after what happened at Columbus and getting ready for these guys? Such a huge difference in prep for, you know, one of the top five teams in the country, now going to an FCS team. How did they prep for that after what happened at the Horseshoe?
Well, when it goes down like it did at the Horseshoe, there becomes a sense of urgency. You know what I mean? And the thing that I worried about, and in order, the great teams are consistent. They're consistent in their approach each and every day. You know, it's when you start to do too much or you start to want to completely change, overhaul things, and that's when you get in trouble. That's a sign of a lack of confidence. So I worried about that, honestly, to be honest with you, because Well, we've got a great core group of leaders. We truly do, but there are not that many of them, you know, that have been in the fire. A lot of these guys are getting their first action and having to step up, make plays for the first time. And the last thing that you wanted to do is for them to press. Scotty Miller was one of them, you know, and he came out and he had a huge game. We'd like to see T.O. made a catch this week, which was huge. We've got to get him going on the outside, and we've got to get the big Pudavon kid to be a little more consistent, because he's definitely a weapon. But their attitude was great. If anything, I was worried about, them just putting a little bit too much pressure on themselves. They just wanted to play again, man. They it's a very prideful group that won a lot of football games, and it didn't sit well with them. And
nor should it have, obviously. And this week, of course, is going to be a little bit different prep, coming off of a victory, even if it wasn't the most the most beautiful or aesthetically pleasing thing. Let's talk. I know you haven't really gotten into practice about this yet. The preparations are just being made now for Middle Tennessee. But what can you tell us about this week's matchup with the Blue Raiders?
Oh, it ought to be a fun one. They're a bowl contending team last year, played a great bowl game with Western Michigan last year in the Bahamas Bowl. Returning the quarterback, young quarterback. Coach's kid, Stockstill, I think he threw for 400 some yards versus an SEC opponent last week. They got one of the better receivers in the country, and the Richie James kid, who was a freshman All-American last year, and he's tough to handle. So they're going to play up tempo. They're going to spread the ball around, and it'll be a challenging matchup for us defensively.
They put up 39.5 points a game right now through two games, 588 yards of total offense. Yeah, that's a challenge for your defense.
Yeah, no doubt. And defensively, they can run around a little bit too. So it's time to put it all together. I think they look a lot like us. I think it's a very good matchup. I think we're two similar ball clubs, and we've got to go out and execute at a high level.
Well, Coach, listen, great win. I mean, congratulations on the win. It wasn't a great win, but I guess all W's are W's, right? So congratulations on getting that first win after the rough start, obviously, in the Horseshoe. Let's see if we can make it two in a row, and we'll look forward to chatting with you again next week.
Appreciate it, guys. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Coach. Coach Mike Jenks joining us right there, Bowling Green head coach, after the victory over North Dakota State, now they have Middle Tennessee State, and that'll be an interesting one, because they fire it around down there in Middle Tennessee State. The Blue Raiders put it up in the air early and often, and it'll be an interesting matchup coming up next week, or this Saturday, we'll say that. All right, here's what we've got coming up. And Jim Cushlin, it's still unbelievable that we are here talking about this yet again. Another quarterback change is coming to Cleveland. Robert Griffin III thought yesterday when he spoke to the media that he had a sprained shoulder. Turns out he's got a fractured shoulder, a fractured bone in his shoulder, and he's now been put on the IR. It's going to be at least 8 games that he is out. However, it could very well be the entire season. Here's Robert Griffin III.
And the play happened, and you just got to move on from it. And sprained shoulder, and just monitor it and see how it goes.
How are you now? Can you move
your left arm? Yeah, I can move my left arm. It's just I'm in pain, but I'll be okay. Just continue to monitor it. Yeah, like I said, just figured we'll see more tomorrow. See how my shoulder's feeling, and just move on.
Yeah, and it wasn't really necessarily about how it was feeling. It was about what was structurally wrong with it. And unfortunately, Dr. Griffin III at the podium yesterday after the game, saying that it was sprained, misdiagnosed himself. It is a fractured bone. What did you say that bone was, Jim Cushman?
It is the coracoid, and I hope I'm pronouncing that right. I'm no MD or anything either. The coracoid bone in the shoulder.
Dr. Cushlin, Dr. Griffin, we need you to consult on what's wrong here. It is just unreal to me. And I was afraid of this. Right before we came on the air, it was around, what, Jim, about 2:40 or so that this announcement was made? That's when the report came in. And my son texts me and says, "Where quarterbacks go to die." My 13-year-old son texted me when he heard that and said, "Where quarterbacks go to die." And that's exactly what I said, if you recall, this past offseason when Robert Griffin III, looking to restart his career, get out of Washington, where clearly he and Jay Gruden were not on the same page. Maybe he and the roster weren't on the same page. I said, of all places to go, he's going to choose to revive his career where? At the place where quarterbacks go to die. Clearly it stuck with my son because that's exactly what he texted me. And, Jim, I meant it. I was so afraid in this past off season when we looked at Alex Mack leaving, when we talked about Mitchell Schwartz leaving. We talked about, two-fifths of an already suspect offensive line, two of the three best, were gone. I mean, obviously, Betonio is still there and Joe Thomas, but you're talking about replacing key guys in the offensive line for a quarterback who has had injury problems and putting him with a bunch of receivers that are very, very young and just trying to get their sea legs underneath them as NFL receivers, talking about rookies like Coleman and not rookies, but, first-time starters at receiver like Terrell Pryor. Andrew Hawkins is a veteran, but not exactly anybody's, pro bowler. So the point here is this guy is going to come in behind a suspect line with suspect receivers, and he's going to get himself hurt. Game one. Now, I'm not just – this isn't hindsight. This isn't me, changing things on the – after the fact. I said this guy's going to come in. He's going to get himself hurt. He's coming to a place where quarterbacks go to die. He may not have died yet. His career may not have died yet after this, but it's a huge step back. A guy played his first game in about a year and a half because he did not play at all last year for Washington. He only played a little bit in 2014 with the injury. He's back. He's in a new place. He's got a lot of positive momentum. He was just named captain, voted captain by his team because of his leadership. It's all going to turn around now for Robert Griffin III, and then bang, shoulder, fracture, out 8 weeks, possibly out the season.
Well, my three thoughts on all this, real quick, because I know we're up against it. One, it'll be Josh McCown starting, and for those of you keeping track with the whole quarterback jersey, it's not a new name because he's already on there, so there is that. Number two, I already heard a lot of people already overreact. Oh, see, this is why you should have taken Carson Wentz and all that stuff, and overreact.
That isn't why. Jim, that isn't why people are saying you should have taken Carson Wentz. The reason they're saying they should have taken Carson Wentz is because of the way Carson Wentz played against them yesterday.
Right, and that's part of what's coming up, but regardless of how Carson Wentz played, regardless of the injury, let's not overreact on that one. And number three, Bob, during the game, I sent out one tweet during the Browns game, and we like throw these out there. If you want to follow me personally, it's at James Cushlin. My one tweet to me sums up my opinion as a fan for the entire 2016 Browns. It reads, quote, "This is why the Indians need to make the World Series. Game one would be the same day as the Cavs ring opener. Then I can bypass the Browns for this whole year." End
well,
quote.
You know what came to my mind, and I didn't tweet it, but what came to my mind are three letters, S-O-B. And they have three different meanings. Number one, the word sob, to weep uncontrollably. Number two, son of a And number three, same old Browns. That's what I saw on Sunday. Same old Browns, the SOBs, they make you want to sob. That is my my commentary on the Browns season opener and maybe on the Browns entire season. But we still have to cover them. Good stuff from Chris Lemieux on the Lions in hour number one. We'll get to Dennis Mantiloff talking about the Browns with us coming up in hour number two at 4:05. We want you to be a part of our conversation today as well, right here on our Monday afternoon quarterback edition of the Extravaganza. So get in line at 866-240-1065, and we'll talk to you coming up. But Mantiloff first, so maybe you don't want to get in line yet, but be ready. Have the number. Save it. We'll talk to Mantiloff about the Browns, Robert Griffin, and the entire story next, right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
J.T. Barrett out of the shotgun. Option left side. Barrett keeping. Gets to the 10. Barrett to the 5. Barrett to the pylon. And Barrett, touchdown. Ran it down the left side. Got an excellent block from Curtis Samuel. And J.T. Barrett has given Ohio State a 26-3 lead on his second running touchdown of the year. Barrett in a shotgun. Gets the snap. Hands it to Weber. Straight ahead for his first collegiate touchdown. Mike Weber. 1 yard run. 33-3. Ohio State.
Back to throw, Spate, looking right, throws right. He's got his tight end, Jake Butt. It's a touchdown, Michigan, from 3 yards out. He's going to try from 50. Here's the kick, it's blocked. Michigan blocks it, comes right back into the hands of the kicker right, and he is tackled immediately by Jeremy Clark, and the Wolverine defense stands tall.
Got it once, the throw, pressure comes, set up a screen, get it to Riddick. Riddick for 15, Riddick 10, Riddick 5, Riddick end zone! Touchdown, Detroit Lions! Larry Warford with a big block to help spring him, and the Lions are back on top. Here we go, for the lead. 43 yards, hash mark left side, spot down, kick on the way. It is up, and it is good! He got it! Matt Prater with 4 seconds to go, and the Lions are back on top. Gray is going to take this 1 yard deep. He's coming out. Here he goes. Should be the final play of the game. Gray throws it behind him. It is taken by a Colt. He flips it back. They're throwing it around. It is now T.Y. Hilton running down the right sideline. He is hit. He's looking for somewhere to go. They're still pinned back inside the 10. It is taken by T.Y. Hilton. He throws it away. It's out of bounds. Put this baby away. This game is over.
Momentum, you know, all of a sudden, you know, we had a ball, snapped over the quarterback's head, and safety to me, I thought that's when it kind of tilted and started going the other way. I thought momentum was kind of coming our way. It would have been nice to finish that drive with a touchdown. We had our opportunities and didn't get it done, so I take total responsibility for that, all that on offense. This team, you know, we got to get better, and we will.
We wanted to get the win. That's all that matters, and we came up short today, and it started with me. Just had to play better. You know, put us in better situations, can't turn the ball over. Yeah, a guy kind of surprised me there on the sideline trying to get out of bounds. And, you know, just an unfortunate play. Just trying to, you know, fight for as many yards as we could, try to, you know, go score a touchdown, at least put us in a position to have a chance to win the game. Hurt pretty bad, but felt like I could get back out there and finish the battle with my teammates out there on the field. The play happened, and you just got to move on from it. You know, sprained shoulder, and just, you know, monitor it and see how it goes.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Sob, you heard it before. I'll say it again now. Sob, S-O-B, same old Browns. Also stands for son of a B. Also stands for weeping uncontrollably. Sob, that is the theme for the Cleveland Browns after 1 week of the 2016 National Football League season. Great conversation with Chris Lemieux about the Detroit Lions, maybe your Detroit Lions in hour number one. Now let's turn our attention to the sob story that is the Cleveland Browns. Dennis Mantiloff joining us from Cleveland to talk about the start to the season and the end of the season possibly for Robert Griffin III, RG3, on the IR. What's up, D-Man? How are you, brother?
It's always good to converse with the great Bob France and his many, many listeners.
Well, thank you, my friend. We always appreciate when you have some time to drop some knowledge on us. Just reaction, immediate reaction. It was a little over an hour ago we found out, around 2:40 or so, that Robert Griffin III didn't have a sprained shoulder, as he suggested yesterday in postgame. He has a fractured bone in his shoulder and now is out for at least 8 and maybe for the duration of the campaign. Your instant reaction.
Well, of course, it's disappointing. I mean, cue the jokes, and they're all coming in, especially nationally. Oh, look at the clowns, same old clowns. But, you know, look, they took a flyer on Griffin. Hugh Jackson liked him enough to go after him, and, you know, the hope was that he could resuscitate his career. And first game, he gets injured doing what he's been injured doing before, which is running outside the numbers. And he got drilled by, you know, the cornerback going out of bounds. And the next thing you know, he couldn't lift his arms, his left arm. So it's unfortunate, to say the least. But I just don't, I don't get why Cleveland Browns football automatically has to be the subject of a joke when a player suffers a fracture or a broken bone. You know, it's not like Griffin was so inept on Sunday that he couldn't play. Then you might want to, you know, insert joke here. But the guy's hurt. It's unfortunate for him and the Browns. That's how I look at it.
I think Dennis, all it is really, it's just, you know, it's bad luck, Browns. It's like you shake your head. It's kind of like what you coined. I don't know if you actually coined it or you're the one I was associated with, though, but about OIC, you know, only in Cleveland. You know, they get their first game of the year against the quarterback they decided they did not want. They would rather take the boatload of draft picks they could get to not take Carson Wentz and to give him to the Eagles. He comes out, throws a couple of touchdowns, has 101 quarterback rating, and the guy they turn to instead of taking him as their quarterback of the future, Robert Griffin III, gets knocked out of the game for and maybe out of the season. So it's just more, I think people are like, same old Browns, they can't catch a break. It's not like they did something wrong here. It's just that they can't catch a break. They get a quarterback here, like you said, trying to resuscitate his career, and instead gets injured again. So it's just kind of one of those things that makes you shake your head. Like I said, I sob at the story. It's the same old Browns in that they cannot catch a break.
Yeah. I'll certainly buy the OIC part. Yeah, it is only in Cleveland. The great Kenny Rota coined that, as far as I know. And, when you add it all up, you painted the perfect picture, Bob. It was, I heard from so many people going into that game who said to me, okay, you know what's going to happen because this is the Browns. Carson Wentz, the guy they decided not to draft, is going to have a good game. The Browns are going to look bad. And some of them said that RG3 was going to look bad enough that he had to get pulled. I don't know of anyone that I talked to who was predicting that he would get hurt to the point where, you know, he would miss at least half a season and perhaps the whole one. So, yeah, I mean, it was set up to where it was one of those OIC deals with the Browns, but I just draw the line there. I'm not going to the whole, you know, what a joke of a franchise. Because now you've got the knee jerk. Oh, what a terrible signing Robert Griffin III was. I disagree. I do too.
But yeah. I think the decision, Dennis, the bad decision here wasn't made by the Browns. It was made by RG3. Only because this is traditionally where quarterbacks have come to die. How many times have we seen it happen? And I said, here's
including
a guy
Doug
trying
Peterson
to revive and breathe new life into his career after getting out of Washington, and the place he goes to get new life is the place where quarterbacks go to die. And so to me, I don't feel like the Browns made a mistake on Robert Griffin, and I really don't even feel like that Robert Griffin made a mistake in trying to get a new start somewhere. It's just that, again, it's bad luck. It's whatever it is that adds up to these things not working out. And it's nobody's fault. It's just a matter of they can't catch a break, and obviously Robert Griffin couldn't catch a break here either, and Lord knows if he'll ever take another snap.
Well, and Bob, I'll tell you, the mistake that would have been made, we'll only know, time will tell about Wentz, okay? He certainly looked good. I was on board with Wentz, you know, in the run-up to the draft. I said, don't do anything foolish. Just pick number two, pick him at two when you know that Goff's going to L.A., Hey, but then when they didn't do it, I saw the haul that they got from Philadelphia. I said, hey, that's not a bad thing for a rebuilding team. But if Wentz turns out to be as good, you know, anywhere near as good as he was yesterday, then, the Browns are going to have to answer to that second guessing. But to me, besides that, which again won't be legislated until years to come, the mistake they could have made was trading Josh McCown.
Exactly.
Okay, and that's when I said at the time when the rumors started flying around, I said, you don't want to trade this guy because, number one, you have to have some kind of insurance for Robert Griffin III. And we were talking, I'm sure we talked about this, Bob, when I was on with you last. You had to be cognizant of Griffin's injury history and the fact that he does run a little bit and he does expose himself to hits. You couldn't ignore his resume and the injury history. So you had to have a quarterback who could step in case he got hurt. And to me, if you were going to deal McCown, who was going to replace him? Who was going to be the backup quarterback on this team? At least now you can send out there a guy who, oh, I don't know, I think he threw for 450 yards at Baltimore the last time I checked last year. So I'm not saying that Josh McCown is in the Hall of Fame. He's nothing but a stopgap. He's way up there in years. He's got a terrible one-loss record. I get all that. But at least he's a competent quarterback who can step in, who knows the system, knows the personnel, and you don't have to trust, let's say, Cody Kessler to try to play competent NFL football right now.
Dennis Maniloff is our guest. He covers the Cleveland Browns and much more out in Cleveland for the Cleveland Plain Dealer, the Northeast Iowa Media Group, and, of course, he is an author of a tremendous book called From A to Z, From Andrews to Zastadil. Dennis, highs and lows from yesterday. I'm going to assume that the Griffin injury that we now know today is an IR injury with that fractured bone in his shoulder. If that is the low, what is your high, or is there another low?
Oh, well, you know, the low, yeah, the lowest is losing, you know, a starting quarterback to that significant of an injury. I don't care what team you are, what stage of the building or rebuilding you're in, that's a bad situation, and so it's unfortunate. You know, another low is probably just the overall performance of this team. Granted, expectations are minimal. One loss total's presumably going to be really low, with Griffin.
But this was one of those games, Dennis. I picked them to win. I didn't have you on last week, so I didn't get a pick from you. And the reason was is I thought that a rookie quarterback who had never started in a game with 80,000 people in the stands in his life, because he played at North Dakota. A guy who has never been in a kind of a competition like this. He only took 39 snaps in the preseason. I just figured he was going to struggle. I said this is the kind of game the Browns could get the season off on the right foot to win, and they didn't, and they didn't even come close. So I get it why you would say an overall, overall the team performance. But, you know, to me, I got to look at the defense if I'm looking for lows here as well. They let this rookie quarterback shred them for all intents and purposes. 278 isn't like it's Drew Brees' 443, but it's 278 with two touchdowns, no picks, and a 101 quarterback rating to this rookie from North Dakota, for crying out loud.
Correct. Yeah, that's a disappointment. You know, the offense sputtering the way it did in the second half is a disappointment. Cam Irving's snap over Griffin's head, the fake punt that was a disaster. Hugh Jackson didn't have his greatest 3+ hours as a head coach. So, not a good performance at all by the Browns. And as you say, what seemed to be a winnable game on paper.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you this, Bob. The one high that I came out with is Terrell Pryor. All right. I'm telling you what, it's been fun to chronicle this guy, and he looks like he belongs out there. All right, now we see, okay, we saw it in the preseason. We saw it in scrimmages. You heard about it in practices. You read about it and all this stuff. But okay, when the real game starts, can he perform? And I'll tell you what, he looked pretty darn good out there. I mean, he wasn't setting the world on fire. I think he only had 4 catches in terms of volume, but he made a really long catch with an incredibly athletic move. What I like the most about Pryor so far, taking in everything and plus the one regular season game, is the size differential that he's going to have on the outside, provided, as expected, a cornerback is covering him. He has the speed to run with a corner, and that corner is going to be giving up 4, 5, 6 inches on him. And you've already seen it in the preseason and yesterday, where he can win the jump ball. If you get him, you give the ball at the right height, he can go up and get it over the small corner. So prior of all the guys yesterday, he was the one that I was most encouraged about.
We are talking with Dennis Mandeloff here on the Extravaganza, a little bit of a Browns season opener recap and review. So, he is seven targets, by the way, three catches in the game for Pryor. Coleman had a couple of catches as well, including a long one, a 58-yarder, I want to say, was the long one for Corey Coleman. I would again point to this receiving core, despite having some youth and some potential in the guys that we just named. It still is just one of the weaker at today, one of the weakest receiving cores in the United States or the United States. I feel like I'm talking college football now, in the NFL. And that to me made the job for Robert Griffin a lot harder. We talked about this in the beginning too. You lose Alex Mack, you lose Mitchell Schwartz, your offensive line is new, or at least a good portion of it is new. You got a very inexperienced receiving core. No matter what you say about Pryor's potential, it's inexperienced out there at the NFL level. And that's tough. And then he's going to try to make things happen and keep plays alive, try to make a play with his feet, and obviously he gets himself hurt. I just feel like it was almost destined to be that way, given what they surrounded him with what we had Petrek on last week. 28 or so of the 53-man roster, does that sound right, are rookies or second-year players. Most of the second-year players were not starters in their rookie year, so they don't have a ton of experience, less than a handful of games experience. That's a tough way to send a quarterback out to try to revive his career out there with those weapons.
I agree. Yeah, and I mean, that's part of we said for a while rebuild, but Les Levine coined it the build, because what are they rebuilding from? We've talked about that.
Indeed.
But you know what? I mean, you knew this was going to be the reaction, Bob. I mean, going into throughout the offseason, everybody's like, okay, Hugh Jackson and Hugh we trust. All right, we understand it's a long process, da 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 da. And as soon as they lose a game like that and look bad, then all of a sudden, the panic sets in. I mean, that's just normal around here. And it's like, okay, what are we doing? Does Jackson know what he's doing? And da 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 da, and Griffin and all this. I mean, come on. It is going to be a long process. It doesn't mean you sit there and you don't get disappointed about losses just because your team is years away and is starting some sort of a build. But you can't be unrealistic about it. I mean, you can't say, okay, if they look bad this year, it's time to throw in the towel. I mean, that's exactly the mistake that Haslam's made in previous years, is he's pulled the plug quickly and hasn't had the patience to see a legitimate build or rebuild through.
Dennis, can I ask you to take off your Browns coverage hat for just a moment and put on your Indians? Because
yes, sir.
Literally as we are speaking, I get the note from Bart Swain with the Indians. Speaking of injured arms, we have Robert Griffin with the Browns with his left shoulder with the fracture. Danny Salazar is going to be out for 3 to 4 more weeks. He has apparently strained his flexor musculature, according to the wording by Dr. Mark Schickendance. His previous UCL reconstruction is intact. He'll undergo a PRP injection tomorrow. I don't know what that stands for. But he will be shut down from throwing at all for 10 days. His time frame for return to game activity is 3 to 4 weeks. And at that point, we will be in the first round, 3 to 4 weeks from now, in the first round of the Major League Baseball playoffs. That is a blow to the Indians' rotation.
Yeah, I'm not a doctor. I don't play one on radio. But I would be seriously shocked if he is able to pitch at any point for the rest of the season. I'm talking including playoffs. I mean, I know that, what they put down there puts them at what, like you said, the first round, but, man, I mean, I don't know. I have
my first round. I mean, really legitimately 4 weeks from now would be October 12th. We're talking the end of the first round, I would imagine, and going to
right. Even if you get him back healthy, where do you trust them? And let's say the Indians were, first of all, they have to get in. Okay. Once they get, if they were to get in, then they have to advance. All right, so you get deep into the playoffs, and he says, okay, I'm good to go. Where are you going to trust him? You're just going to plop him in and say, oh, yeah, he'll be fine. He'll give us 7 innings, 1 run. No, you can't. I don't think you can trust Salazar, even if he says he feels good, because he's not going to be sharp, and he's going to have been off for a month. So I wouldn't count on anything from Danny Salazar for as long as the Indians play in 2016.
So that being the case, what do you, how do you, you know, assess their chances of doing anything in the playoffs? You got Kluber, who's having a Cy Young caliber year. He probably will not win it, but he's having a Cy Young caliber year. Carlos Carrasco had one glitch in, I think, his last 10 starts and has been superb. Trevor Bauer has kind of turned it back on and has found it, but that's great for a five-game series, those three guys. But when you get into an ALCS and you got to go seven, what do they do? Is it Mike Clevinger? I mean, Josh Tomlin can't be trusted. Where do they go?
Yeah, that's a, you know what? I think it's one of those really, Bob, and I'm not dismissing your question because it's legit, but I think it's one of those where they'll worry about it if and when they get to it, because you can't add anybody at this point. You can't go acquire anybody and have them be eligible for the postseason. Really, first of all, you have to hope. Well, there's several layers to this. Number one, Kluber and Carrasco have to deliver the goods. I mean, you're not going anywhere if your two top guys don't continue to perform at a high level. And they've certainly given all indication that they're going to be able to pitch well for you the rest of the way. So you hope that that's in the guaranteed or close to guaranteed category. Next phase, Trevor Bauer. I mean, he is an absolutely enormous piece now. He has to deliver for you. He has to pitch well, because if he goes south, then you're, you know, really, really in trouble, because now Bauer is clearly the number three, and he must stay the number three. He can't just pitch poorly and fade into the five hole or long relief. He's your best chance at three, and almost your only chance at the three spot in the rotation. So you've got to hope Bauer delivers. And then the third phase is, you know, you patch it together in the four spot, in terms of some of those. I know it's almost unthinkable that in a postseason game you would do the bullpen day, if you will. But I don't know who else I would trust to take the ball for five innings in a postseason game past Kluber, Carrasco, and Bauer.
Well,
not Tomlin, not Clevinger,
maybe,
not Cody Anderson.
Would you have to maybe consider a guy who's had some more experience there and maybe look at Zach McAllister?
Oh, gosh. I mean, look.
I'm looking for starters who have started and started, you know, with a little bit of experience here. I mean, if they like, I get it, Dennis. You know, if they get there, they'll cross it when you get there. But we're in sports radio, so they got to figure that out. We get to talk about it now.
Yeah.
And we're talking about, you know, solidifying this rotation. Not, hey, you know what, Dennis? Not to be real worrisome about this or overly dramatic, but they're not in the playoffs yet. The magic number is what, 14? They still have to take care of their business. They've got to have a five-man rotation now down the stretch. They got to put away the Tigers. It's a seven-game lead right now, and that seems like it should be enough with, 18 days or so of baseball left. But, you know, they got to take care of business. So as we figure out how they do that now, that gives us reason to project out into the first round or the second round of the postseason.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. Even if you don't worry, even if you don't talk about the postseason, they still have to finish this regular season. They must clinch to make it anything worthwhile. They have to get into the playoffs, and that's going to take some work. It's not done yet. I know seven games feels like a ton at this stage of the year, but, you know, the Tigers and Indians still play seven times against each other, and I'm sure the Tigers are thinking, you know, 6-1 against Cleveland, you know, we got a fighting chance. And that's not out of the realm of possibility, given that the Indians have gone 11-1 against them in the first 12. So by no means is the division race over. And if the Indians were to get pinched in the division, they got to figure out a way to, you know, win the wild card. So there is still regular season meaning, and that's a great point that you raise. How do you get to the finish line of the regular season with three starters? There is going to have to be at least another bullpen day. They're probably going to look for Clevinger, who pitched reasonably well in his brief stint against Minnesota the last time out over the weekend. They'll probably look to Clevinger as one of the guys to fill the 4 or 5 spot. They might have to say, you know what, we're going to take our chances with Tomlin in a matchup that we like. But there's not, you know, there's not many teams, I don't think, right, that are left on the schedule that they, you know, match up well with Tomlin, because they're only playing 3 more opponents.
Right.
Kansas City, Detroit, and the White Sox. And I don't think you want to run Tomlin out there against Kansas City or Detroit. So, yeah, it's going to be a challenge. You might see this Morimondo guy, the lefty that they brought up from the minors. He might be in play. It's going to be fascinating to see how Terry Francona and pitching coach Mickey Callaway do this.
Yeah, no question about it. And we just have to keep our fingers crossed. That Salazar setback is a big, big deal. Literally just broke in the last 10, 12 minutes or so. The Indians made it official that he is going to be out. Cannot throw at all of any kind for 10 days. Cannot come back to game action for at least 3 to 4 weeks. And, again, we push that out. You know, best case scenario, they're still in the first round. Worst case scenario, he's done. He's shut down for the rest of the 2016 season and postseason, and then the Indians have to scramble. All right, hey, Dennis, really good stuff, man. We always appreciate your analysis of the sports from the Cleveland side of things. Thanks so much, my friend. We'll talk again real soon.
Thank you, Bob.
All right, there you go. It's 4:36. Dennis Mandeloff joining us right here on ESPN 106.5. The Ticket, Robert Griffin III, out for 8 weeks minimum, maybe the season. Not sure yet, with a fractured bone in his left shoulder. At least it's his non-throwing shoulder. While then we transition over to Danny Salazar, who is out for, again, 3 to 4 weeks with a recurrence I don't know what we'd want to call it. It wasn't the same injury, but it was a sprain. The UCL damage that they repaired surgically is still intact, but there is a sprain now, and he is shut down for a while, too. All right, here's what we'll do. Take a quick time out here. We're going to Sports Center at the bottom of the hour, and then we're going to come back and take some phone calls. We're going to talk a little bit about other things that happened on the field yesterday. Specifically, that means with respect to the National Football League scores, but also about what happened on the sidelines pregame. More national anthem antics by certain players across the league, not as many as you would think. But they have spawned something far worse. High school players in cities around the country emulating their heroes, emulating Colin Kaepernick and others by sitting or kneeling during the national anthem, showing an extraordinary disrespect for the flag. And that is why this needed to be nipped in the bud. It was not. And now it's on. So we're going to talk a little bit about that as we continue. But before we do all that, let me remind you again to get your butt out to the Buckeye Store and More, the College and Pro Superstore, because the early season sale is on now. 10% store-wide savings with hundreds of new Nike products in stock and 50 to 75% off select items during their doorbuster sales, which are every single day. Ohio State and Michigan. Fan zones for Notre Dame, for Michigan State, for Toledo, BG, the Detroit Tigers, all of it there at the Buckeye Store and More, the College and Pro Superstore. Just get on in at 5700 Monroe in Sylvania. It's right between Ralphie's and Dave's in front of Prometica. Just look for Big Brutus on the Roof. You cannot miss them. Hundreds of new products arrive every day at the Buckeye Store and More. Starlight Plaza in Sylvania at 5700 Monroe, the Buckeye Store and More, the College and Pro Superstore.
6-5, the Ticket.
Indeed, we roll onward at 4:46. Got you until drive time with Miller coming up at 5 o'clock, right here on ESPN 106.5. The Ticket, so interesting football day yesterday. Jim, outside of the Browns and the Lions that we covered pretty much in depth, let's get highs and lows of the day. And by the way, let's get you on the radio, too. What was your high and your low yesterday from the National Football League schedule? And if you want to go back to the Thursday game, which started it all with the Denver Broncos and the Carolina Panthers at a rematch of the Super Bowl, game won by, surprisingly, Trevor Siemian and the Broncos over Cam Newton and the Panthers. You can do that, too. But let's look at highs and lows from week one in the NFL. I know there's still two games to go tonight, the Steelers and the Redskins, one Monday night game, and then you have the San Francisco 49ers hosting the new old Los Angeles Rams. That's going to take some getting used to. It took a long time to get used to saying St. Louis Rams instead of Los Angeles, and it's going to take, I think, the same period of time to say Los Angeles instead of St. Louis.
By the way, I'm having less of a problem with that because I was born into a world where it was the Los Angeles Rams, and if anything, it feels correct again.
Well, so was I. I mean, we all had to adjust to it to go to St. Louis. when they went to St. Louis.
Yeah.
But then you got adjusted to it. And now it's like going back. It's like, wait a minute. It'd be like the Raiders going from the L.A. Raiders back or to Oakland and then back to L.A. again.
Yeah.
It would just be trippy. You know, it's going to take a little while to get used to it. The only thing, have they changed the uniform any since they went back to L.A.?
James? No, I don't think so.
See, that's the thing that bothers me. I liked, and then maybe this is just the
old
school.
Are you saying they should go back to the blue and white, like back in the late 60s, early 70s Rams?
No.
Okay.
The blue and gold.
Oh, blue and gold, my bad.
But you know, the blue and yellow that they had, like, in the 70s and 80s, you know, they kept the blue and yellow in St. Louis, but, you know, they made it, like, goldish.
Yes.
Instead of, you know, and they changed the way the helmets looked, and, you know, everything just, I guess I'm saying, when they made the Super Bowl, the Rams, in Super Bowl 14 against the Steelers, that Rams uniform is to me the classic Rams uniform from
yes.
L.A. They changed it up and modernized it when they went to St. Louis. I guess since they're going back to L.A., I would like to see them go back to that more classic Rams uniform. Because that's what we remember the L.A. Rams as.
Well, I'm looking at a picture right now of some of the uniforms they'll be wearing, and these look a lot more like the classic as opposed to the gold, more of the true yellow with the blue. So these look like...
Okay, well, that's what exactly the reason I asked, because that's what I'm hoping to see.
Me too.
I never liked
the gold one. It has to be old school yellow with the blue. That's what the Rams are supposed to look like.
At least when they're in L.A.,
yes.
It is doggone it. And yeah, I'm looking at it right now, too, and it looks like it is more... traditional, and I hope that's the case. We'll see more up close tonight when, well, they're on the road, so they'll be in their whites, but still, we'll get an idea. Okay, so we still have that going on, but Jim, let's do a little highs and lows of week number one. My high in the NFL in week number one, actually I have two, but it was Jack Del Rio of the Oakland Raiders going for two and going for the win. That was a gutsy call against the Saints yesterday. He knew. And maybe it wasn't so gutsy, to be quite honest, if you think about it in these terms. You, it's 34-33, and you're either going to win the game right now with a two-point conversion, or you're going to tie the game and give the ball back to Drew Brees. Drew Brees is 28 for 42 for 423, four touchdowns, and zero picks. You haven't stopped him all day. The odds of you stopping him from going down there and getting a game winner or even in overtime stopping him are probably pretty slim to none. So looking at it in either way, it is a gutsy, gutsy call to go for two. Jack Del Rio taking over the Raiders and putting a winning atmosphere into play, I guess, if we can say it that way. Which they have not had for a long time in Oakland. He's building something out there in Oakland now. He's got Derek Carr, a true franchise quarterback in the making, 24 for 38, 319, a touchdown, no picks. He's got Amari Cooper, one of the rising receiving stars in this game, 6 for 137 yesterday, including what turned out to be that game winner in the two-point conversion. I just loved Jack Del Rio's decision to go for two. I just it just made me feel good. It made me and I don't know, there might be some Raider bias there because, of course, I used to work with the Raiders, and so I still kind of like to see the silver and black do a great job. But I just like the call. No matter who did it, I just like the call. My second high in week number one in the National Football League actually happened after the Thursday night game. As you know, Brandon Marshall, linebacker for the Denver Broncos, decided he was going to be the only one in the stadium on Thursday night, the night the Broncos got their championship banner hung. Brandon Marshall decided he was going to be the only one to take a knee and protest the national anthem. Well, that protest earned this come Friday, literally the very next day, this statement by the Air Academy Federal Credit Union. Quote, "Although we have enjoyed Brandon Marshall as our spokesperson over the past 5 months, Air Academy Federal Credit Union has ended our partnership. AAFCU is a membership-based organization who has proudly served the military community for over 60 years. While we respect Brandon's right of expression, his actions are not a representation of our organization and membership." Glenn Strieb, President CEO of Air Academy Federal Credit Union. Sponsors hitting these activist athletes right where they need to be hit, in their bleeping wallets. And that's... That is a highlight for me for week number one in the National Football League. I got two highs there, Jack Del Rio and the Air Academy Federal Credit Union. Kush, what were yours?
My two highs, I definitely agree. One of them has to be what Del Rio and the Raiders did, especially the gutsy call. The other one is this is kind of a good and a bad one all rolled into one. And that is in the Chiefs Chargers game, which was at one point in that game, it was 21-3, actually 24-3 early in the fourth. And Kansas City eventually comes back and ends up winning it. And then they get the overtime touchdown. I caught bits and pieces of that one overall yesterday afternoon. And KC had no business winning that game whatsoever. What do we got here in the fourth? 1-2. They scored 17, outscored them 17-3 in the fourth to end up tying that and saying it's overtime. So yeah, Jack Del Rio and what he did with Oakland, especially that final call, and KC for a very interesting comeback in a divisional game, no less, to open the season.
Yeah, no doubt that is a great win for Kansas City. I just don't care too much about Kansas City, so I don't really have that one on my highlight list or on my high of the week list. My low, though, for the week, for week number one in the National Football League, though, aside from the most obvious one, and that is the fact, and I don't want to use this because we used it before, but that is Robert Griffin III breaking a bone in his shoulder. What's that? What bone was that again, Jim Cushion?
Oh, geez. Dr. Fine, Dr. Howard, coracoid bone in the shoulder is what it's apparently called, and I'm still not sure if I'm pronouncing that right.
Which may have him out for the season, certainly for 8 games at least. My low for the week is going to be the comeback victory for the Cincinnati Bengals, because I cannot stand the Cincinnati Bengals. A very close win over the New York Jets, 23-22. I thought this was a game that maybe the Jets, especially at home, could win and put the Bengals in an early hole in the AFC North. The Bengals, to me, are just about without redeeming value. Vontaze Burfict, I know he's suspended for the first 3 games of the season. Pac-Man Jones and the rest of the Bengals, I just don't like them. I got to give it up to A.J. Green, 12 catches, 180 yards, one of the most dominating performances of the weekend. As a matter of fact, maybe with the exception of Drew Brees, A.J. Green was the offensive player of the first week. Maybe. I got to think about everybody else, but maybe with the exception of Brees. But I just didn't like it. I was really rooting for the Jets to win. So anytime I see the Bengals win in comeback fashion, Mike Nugent, 47-yard field goal, gets the win with 54 seconds left over the Jets, 23-22. So that was a low for me, watching the Bengals win. You got a low for us there, Kush?
And scanning around for the low, because like you, I don't want to take the too obvious one that we spent half the show on, which is RG3 in the Browns. That's the obvious one, so I'll go with my secondary one, which is the Jaguars at home against the Packers. Had 3 drives, literally only touched the ball 3 times in the second half. 10-play drive for a field goal, 14-play drive for a field goal, 10-play drive that they could not convert at the end of the game. They nearly stole that one against the Packers. I guess if you're the Jaguars, the only thing you can look at as a positive, it's like, well, I'm seeing a little bit of improvement. Blake Bortles wasn't horrible in that game, but they had a chance to beat the Packers to open the season. They couldn't finish it off.
Well, I'll tell you what, and that's fine, and I have no problem with that one either. I'm going to throw 2 more at you before we're done here, and I know we got to get. But I'm going to throw 2 more at you. One is Cam Newton, and Thursday night, Cam Newton had his head batted around like a ping pong ball, and they did not put him in the concussion protocol, which means they are violating their own newly established rules. That is one low, or another low, for week number one. And the other one is the number of players besides Brandon Marshall who decided to kneel down during their national anthems at their respective games, even on 9/11. And the impact that is having on young football players, including high school players, which we'll talk more about tomorrow. And before we do anything else, though, and wrap this bad boy up, how did your fantasy team do this week? Week one is officially in the books. Did you get in on the fun over at FanDuel.com? If you didn't, it's not too late. Week two is only days away. Did you take a chance on a starting quarterback as a rookie or a first-year starter with a new team like Carson Wentz of the Eagles or Brock Osweiler, or the new franchise guy in Houston? If you did, nice job. Paid off pretty well for you. Of course, if you spent your QB money on Drew Brees, you're obviously a fantasy veteran. You knew he was going to pay off huge, and he did. FanDuel is fantasy football for everyday fans with new contests starting every single week. That means no busted seasons. Pick a contest, choose your team, and watch your score in real time. Get even more contest variety this year with FanDuel, including beginner contests for new players only, friend contests and head-to-head matches. Try 50-50 contests where the top half win cash. Play in big tournaments, small tournaments for a buck you can play. That means choices for every budget. And this week's Sunday Million Contest pays out at least $1 million in prizes. Have all that fantasy football has to offer at FanDuel. Be sports rich. Try it now and get up to $50 in free entries. New users who deposit get 5 free entries to the NFL's 50-50 beginner contest, valued at up to $50. You get 1 free entry a week for 5 weeks. That's right. Get to FanDuel.com. Click on the Join Now button and use my promo code FRANCE. That's F-R-A-N-T-Z. That's FanDuel.com. Promo code FRANCE. Void where prohibited. Fantasy football, France style. I'm loving it. I hope you are too. Hey, thanks for a fun show today. We'll talk to you tomorrow at 3 o'clock for the next extravaganza. Stay where you are. Miller's next.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.